Okay, today I want to talk about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And why, you might ask, are we going to talk about Willy Wonka? Well, because of everything that I've read so far about God and his plan for the world, about good versus evil, and about free choice, it seems like, believe it or not, this movie is one of the best examples of how things work. It's not a perfect analogy, but it's really a good way to show what God's plan is and how he set up the world. Because God, like any parent, he wants his children to experience pleasure. But he also knows that it's not really pleasure when we're given things for free, when we don't work for it. There's something here that I've learned, it's called the bread of shame or the bread of embarrassment. And we try to, when we do give to people, we always give secretly because we don't want people to feel bad. And we know it's human nature that when you really work for something, that's what true pleasure is. And that's what God wants for us. And so he set up this plan with rules to follow and things to overcome. And this is what he knows as a wise and loving father will give us that true pleasure. And so that's exactly what's going on in this story about this very famous chocolate factory called Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory. And it produces the world's greatest chocolates and candies, okay? So what happens is, just go over the story just to remind you what it was, is the Mr. Wonka, he runs a contest, and the winners of the contest are going to be allowed to enter his and tour his factory. No one's ever been able to do that before. But there's a rule. They have to sign a contract and follow the rules. And one of the rules is that you can't eat any of the products inside the factory unless you're given permission. So if you follow all the rules at the end, you receive the lifetime supply of this wonderful chocolate. So five children win the contest, and of course they're all very excited, and the TV stations are interviewing them, and the whole world's excited, and they can't wait to enter the factory and see the great wonders that nobody's allowed to see. Okay, so the big day comes, but before the big day comes, Slugworth, the villain, supposedly the villain, he shows them a lot of cash, and he tells them that he's offering them all of this money if they would steal out of the factory this candy called the Everlasting Gobstopper, and it hasn't been produced or marketed yet. And if he's Wonka's competition, he runs Slugworth Chocolate, and so if he gets a sample of this product, he can get it out first, and he can ruin Wonka. Okay, so this is what each of the kids is dealing with. The day comes, they go into the factory. They're each allowed to bring one adult relative, and they actually Wonka gives each of the kids one of these Everlasting Gobstoppers, and it's under the condition that they're never supposed to show it to anyone else. So during the tour of the factory, four of the kids break the rules by taking stuff that they shouldn't have taken, and they all suffer these horrible consequences. In the end, everybody is saved. But they have to leave the factory without their life supply of chocolate because they broke the rules. So the main character is Charlie. And Charlie, he also breaks the rules. He drinks some fuzzy drink he wasn't supposed to take, but nobody seems to know it. And he doesn't say anything, and he doesn't get hurt in the process, so he is the only one that survives until the end of the tour. And so Charlie and his grandfather, they're the only ones left, and Mr. Wonka says, "Well, goodbye." And Charlie's like, "Well, where's my life supply of chocolate?" And Mr. Wonka has somehow found out that Charlie did drink the fizzy drink, and he broke the rules. And that Charlie is not going to get a lifetime supply of chocolate either. And Wonka yells at him for drinking the fizzy drink, and then Charlie feels bad. And Charlie's grandfather is pretty angry, and he tells Charlie, "You know what? Let's just give Mr. Slugworth the Everlasting Gobstopper." And so they're about to leave, and Charlie has a change of heart, and he realizes, no matter how he feels, that stealing and breaking the rules is bad. And so he goes to Mr. Wonka's desk and he returns the gobstopper to him. And this is the great point in the movie. Wonka jumps up and he tells Charlie he won, and Charlie doesn't have any idea what he's talking about. And so it seems that Wonka was looking to retire, and he set up this contest to find an honest child who he could work with, who he could train to be his successor. And so Wonka calls in Wilkinson, his aide, a.k.a. Slugworth. So Slugworth was sent out to each of the children to test them and to see how they would respond. And so anyone who either ate the food that he wasn't supposed to eat or brought a gobstopper to Slugworth was dishonest, and then they wouldn't become the next successor. So, and we see that Wonka himself gives each of the children a gobstopper. Okay, so here's the analogy that I wanted to make, that Slugworth is like the Satan. He works for God. Satan works for God, just like Slugworth worked for Wonka. It's not like he's an independent person. He's working for God. And in Hebrew, the word Satan means hinderer. And so to hinder someone, that means to hold him back, try to prevent him from doing something. So God created the hinderer so that we would have this work to do in the world. He's here to make things difficult for us. And so we have this opportunity to overcome our evil temptations and pass the test. And so this is the whole purpose of Satan. Satan is an angel, and his purpose has been determined by God. So he's only there to try to deter us, to hinder us. And so we have been given free choice. We've been given the ability to do the wrong thing. But more importantly, it gives us the ability to look at evil, refuse to do it. And so when we're presented with this opportunity to do evil, then we also have the ability to choose the good. And this is our free will, because God didn't want a bunch of robots. So we see the same principle like in a gym, when you have these weights, and when you use the resistance that the weights offer, and then we overcome that resistance, and we have muscles, and you work hard for those muscles because you're coming against that resistance. Or when you're trying to lose weight and you resist the temptation to overeat, and then you feel very good that you worked hard and you received the reward. And this is God's definition of pleasure for us. He wants us to not to experience the bread of shame, not to be given things for free, but to have opportunities to work hard and to overcome. And so I'm just going to end with, there's this prayer that we say every day in the morning and at night and two or three times a day. Here we say, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." And so when we say the Lord is one, we know there's one God, but he's one. And that means that everything he created is inside of him and under his control. And that just gives us such peace, because nothing can exist outside of him or compete with him. And so we can calmly, faithfully serve him, knowing that he's our loving father. He has our best interests at heart. So we do our job of carrying out his commands, and then we can be confident in his goodness and his righteousness. And so I just thought that would be a great message, that you could learn the Hebrew perspective of good and evil, and what God is one means. He's not competing with anybody. He created everything, and everything is good because he is good. It's just used here to help us overcome resistance. Okay, that's the lesson of the day. Bye for now.